Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
When we have as good as it gets. Sometimes the grass isn't greener. Soon as they find out, we forget. Sometimes a fool doesn't know he's a fool. Sometimes a dog doesn't know he's a dog. Sometimes I do the stupid things to you when I really did mean it all.
Sometimes a man is gonna be a man,
not an excuse, it's just how it is. Sometimes I'm wrong, don't know that they're wrong. Sometimes I'm strong, ain't always so strong. Sometimes a girl, it's gonna be a girl. She don't wanna deal with all the drama in your world. God knows I don't mean give it to you. Girl, I'm sorry for the stupid things I wish I didn't do.
Now, well, welcome to another episode of Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle. I first want to give all honor to God for me being here because I just flew in last night from Philadelphia. And on the way to Philadelphia, I met some beautiful people, a 7-year-old little girl named Casey and her mother, Miriam. It's nice to have y'all as my air flight partners. And coming back to Atlanta, going towards Georgia, I met some other people, this wonderful woman named Randy, who builds UPS facilities, and Miss Barbara, you know, she's a choir master at her church, and we just had so much fun on the plane, but I'm glad to be on solid ground. So without further ado, let me just say hello to everybody in Hawaii, the United States, Canada, United Kingdom, Cameroon, and Nigeria, Africa, Pakistan, Peru, Australia, Singapore, Iraq, and France. So we are doing good, man. We are spreading all over the globe, man. It's like it's contagious. And I tell your other friends to tune in every Friday live with authoress Terry Lyle on Unmasked because you never know what's going to pop out my mouth. But anyway, tonight is going to be a great night for being, you know, informative and learn some stuff because my guest is Dr. Jeffrey Fadell. And bless your heart, he's going to talk about being bipolar, mentally unstable. And all of y'all know, y'all got some friends who are whacked out and got these issues because I know I have one. She might be listening right now. And then again, sometimes I'll be wondering myself when I be getting, you know, going to extremes, am I flipping out? So we're going to learn some stuff about, you know, depression, being bipolar, and all those good things. But without further ado, let me introduce to some, you know, the handsome Jeffrey Fadell. Man, I seen his face. Whoa, whoa, whoa. How can this brother be bipolar or not, you know, focused? Come on now. I know he had all the chicks running around him, but that's another story. So I'm just going to jump right in and say, hey, Jeffrey, how you doing, baby?
Hi, Terry. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Trust what I tell you, it's a pleasure. Well, let me ask you something, Jeffrey. Coming up, how old were you when you realized there was something different about maybe your mood swings or how you felt about different circumstances? Or when did you know there was an issue after you was an adult or as a child? You kind of could see that, you know, something was like up and down, you know, flipping and flopping.
Yeah, pretty much when I got to college, about 18 is when my depression got severe enough that it became a problem that I started medication. And I'm 45 right now, so I've been medicated for quite some time. But 18 was the crescendo, I would say, the point when it got to the point where I had to actually be on medication.
Well, do you think it has something to do with the fact that, you know, college is a big step. You're going from, you know, an environment where your parents are taking care of you, and now you have to be a man and grow up. So what do you think caused your depression, you know?
Yeah, you're right. The large life stressors, like leaving home, that's kind of like you say, I was used to living with my parents, having things taken care of for me, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden I'm off to college and no one's around, and now it's just me on my own. So the stress of college, I think, was a large part of why it really escalated at that time.
I can understand, because I know, being a female and observing y'all men, you know, a lot of guys, you know, want to be alpha dog or this and that, and then you got all these fraternities and stuff. You know, I don't know if you want to pledge, or if you do pledge, they're still hazing and doing that initiation that's supposed to have been banned a long time ago, as a lot of people lost their death being initiated. But, you know, I don't know about you, but coming up, being a female, there's always bullies out there, you know. And even, you know, it's just hard, you know. I don't know what was hard for you to say, like, you know, okay, where am I going to go from here? You know, like you said, y'all did that protective bubble of your parents and everything, and, you know, that's enough to be depressed. And then you got to make sure your grades are good, because college is very expensive. It's not nothing that's cheap. So you got to produce academically as well as, you know, trying to figure things out. What do? I got to make my own choices.
Yeah, that's right. It's a large change in life, going from being a little boy that's being taken care of, and then all of a sudden you're out on your own. And that's quite the stressor.
I guess it is. Well, while you was depressed and going through it, during your depression, have you ever thought about suicide?
Well, what had happened at that time, pretty much what causes depression in the first place is the reaction to my thoughts. So I wanted to kind of go through that a little bit. So what I'm able to realize at this point is, in the end, what was causing my depression was my reaction to the thoughts that I would have over and over again, pretty much telling myself I was depressed all day. And this is really what's going on with many people today that are depressed. It's that cyclical, unhealthy thinking that's being reacted to all day. You know, thoughts might be, I can't get out of bed, I don't want to go on anymore. And even thoughts like you say, I don't want to live anymore, which is pretty much a suicidal thought. So the more we identify with those thoughts and get carried away with them, the more into a quote-unquote state of depression the rest of our being becomes. Because I wanted to make a little differentiation between the thoughts in our mind, which occur in our mind, and then if the rest of us, meaning the rest of our being, gets swept away with those thoughts, and then our behaviors kind of go in tune with whatever thoughts we might have in our mind.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. Now, I'm going to tell you how I felt a lot of times, and I have never seen a psychiatrist for, you know, things in my thoughts, but maybe there is a condition, because it seems like, Jeffrey, anytime it's snowing and overcast and I don't see sun, I feel like I just want to be in a fetal position. I don't want to go out. I don't want to be bothered. I just feel extremely, you know, disconnected, because I'm from Baltimore, and, you know, I moved to California, and it seemed like I just perked up because it had more days of sun, you know. So is there a seasonal depression? Because trust me, if I'm dealing with a lot of rain or snow or bad weather consistently, I just shut down. I just can't do it.
Yeah, well, psychiatrists have a label for pretty much every state of mind. So in answer to your question, yes, there is a labeled psychiatric condition called seasonal affective disorder that describes what you're saying and tries to say that if you have more sunlight, then you have more serotonin in your brain, which then would cause you to be happier. So these are different theories, but in the end, you know, a lot of the reasons you may feel that way is you might have repetitive thoughts that you just were able to share with me. And then if the being, which is the part of you that's not your thought, believes in those thoughts enough, then you might stay in that fetal position until your thoughts say, okay, it's time to get out of your fetal position and go cook yourself some breakfast.
Exactly.
The more we get carried away with our thoughts, the more it consumes the rest of who we are, which is outside of our mind as well.
Well, you know, Jeffrey, a lot of times people try to associate different traits with different people in different zodiac signs. Now, I'm a Libra, and it's true. I love harmony. I like, you know, nice things. You know, I like my life to feel balanced. And even today, I don't do drama well. That's why I don't really fool with a lot of females, because females are full of drama. You know, I prefer to have a male friend because they won't be wearing my clothes. They won't be trying to steal any boyfriend that I might have. You know, so to me, you know, I don't know if I'll have some issues or not, or I'm just coping with life, because we all got some stuff to go through, trials and tribulations. When do you know the difference between you need help, you got a problem mentally that you need to have some more help with, or you just going through the ups and downs of life? When do I know it's time to say, okay, I need to see somebody?
Well, that's a pretty sensitive question. I could only speak in terms of myself when it comes to something of, you know, as serious as a nature as that. When it's time is, you know, I guess it would be time when your thinking mind actually can be threatening enough that you would, that one would take action against themselves, so to say. And that is. I think for anyone, if their mind is saying that I don't want to live, and that there's enough of a will that someone can actually act out on their thought, that's you know, that's an emergency, of course.
Right.
You know, the whole thing, and I don't. You see, I haven't been on medications for almost 2 years now. So what I've enabled myself to do, and I've done this in near complete isolation, was take a very large risk in my life, and that was to learn myself outside of my thinking mind.
Right.
And so now I know myself in a different way, and now my thoughts don't have that power over me that they did before. And this is kind of like what we can find inside of ourselves. Because human beings are all the same. We might think that we're different. But when we go to sleep and our minds quiet down and the thoughts stop, lo and behold, we're all the same. And we wake up and then we say, hey, here I am. And so the mind can kind of give this illusion that we're different, but no matter what people might think, we're all the same.
Absolutely. Well, Jeffrey, let me ask you this. And for anybody who might be listening, if you want to talk to Dr. Fidel, just dial 347-945-6003. But you must hit the number one key. It will let me know that you got a comment or just a statement. But the question I have for you, Jeffrey, is that, you know, I used to be a tractor trailer instructor, and I had a very critical accident. I flipped over in my truck about four times in a blizzard. I was cut out of the truck, you know, and God is patching me back together. And I live in pain each and every day. And when they flew me home to Baltimore, because at the time I was living in Arizona, and it was an apartment complex, we had a lot of steps. So I decided, you know, me and the guy I was with, you know, I had to be home, get someone who loved me. But to fast forward, what happened was dealing with that pain every day, doctor's visits and stuff like that, I had felt like, you know, I wanted to die, because I was just so tired of dealing with the same thing over and over again. And I know a lot of people out there listening, it might not be an accident that you're trying to recover from your pain. It might be just, you know, your family, it just wearing you down. Your kids are wearing you down. Your husband or your wife are wearing you down. You know, finances could be wearing you down. And I had got to the point where I said, well, I'm so tired of this. You know, I think I've been a pretty good person. I just wanted to die. Now, you know, I told my mother I didn't want to live anymore. And my mother, you know, usually, you know, I'm sure she don't pay too much attention about things that I said, but that night she stayed with me all night long. I was crying, she was crying to get me through, and I think had she not did that, I would have committed suicide. And I know from being a Bible school teacher that had I did that, I would have gone to hell, because you can't commit suicide and go to heaven. But, you know, what advice do you give people who are just going through? Because everybody who's going through are not mentally, you know, incapacitated. I mean, depression could be just a brief thing that comes and it goes after you work through your issues. What do you give advice to people who are just having a hard time right now, just trying to cope?
So for people that are having a hard time, now, some of these things might be difficult to do that I'm going to advise, but I felt that this was something that helped me out, and that is to, let's say, for example, in your case, there might be a part of you that you don't want to feel, for example. Maybe it's the pain after the accident, a certain part of your body that's hurting.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe for someone else, it might be heartache after, you know, they broke up with or got a divorce or something very serious has happened to them. We might be afraid to go to either the pain area of the heart, for example. And when I say go to, that means bring our mind's attention to that area. And that can cause a lot of fear. Like, you know, the mind might be saying to itself, I don't want to go there. I don't want to, you know, I'm so angry. I'm so hurt. These thoughts might be coming over and over again in the mind. But if we can draw our mind's attention to the area that we're afraid of going, we'll find out that it's not as bad as our mind is telling us that it is. So if there's physical pain, to start to try and go to that area and try to feel it without having the mind put words on it, and seeing that it's really not as scary as all the thoughts are making it out to be. Now, this takes a lot of practice to do, but this is a large step because when we're afraid of going to places within ourselves, and sometimes that means outside of the head area, you know, either to the heart or even to where the pain is, meaning drawing our mind's attention there, there's a lot of healing that could be done just that, because it'll take away the fear of being with ourselves, because a lot of people are afraid to be with themselves or to be alone in some matter or going some places with inside of themselves. But that can heal us a lot.
But you are absolutely right about that. I know one time someone told me when I was going to therapy that fear is nothing but pain leaving the body. It sounds good. But, you know, what you said, that you got to go to those places because, you know, sometimes being alone, I feel like I want company, companionship. I'm not talking about intimacy. Sometimes I just don't want to cope with life alone because I just think it's natural to have someone with you. So, you know, I don't know when I know if graduated to an unhealthy assessment in my mind when I'm always thinking, because I think when I go to sleep, I'm still thinking. I can't turn it off. But you know something? I'm going to turn it off for a minute because we're going to need to take a small break. And when we come back in 2 and 2 with Dr. Fidel, stay with us.
Controversial. Real. Unparalleled. Author is Terry E. Lyle, has written an autobiography entitled Broken. Terry talks about overcoming her personal battle with suicide, being homeless, selling and using drugs, and living the life of a swinger. She found that with prayer and her belief in God is real, that she was blessed becoming the woman and authoress she is today. The book is $20 and can be purchased through Amazon, Kindle, createspace.com, and from her own personal website at www.terrylyle.com. It's yours today. And make sure you tune in to hear Terry on Unmasked each and every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com. The number 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. And remember, through God's grace and mercy, all things are possible, for He would not leave you.
Bells will be ringing the glad, glad news. Oh, what a Christmas to have the blues. My baby's gone. I have no friend to wish me greetings once again. Choirs will be singing Silent Night, Christmas carol by candlelight. Please come on for Christmas. Please come on for Christmas. If not for Christmas, by New Year's night. Friends and relations, send salutations. Sure as the stars shine above, this is Christmas. Yes, Christmas, my dear. Time of year to be with the one you love. Then won't you tell me you'll never more roam? Christmas and New Year will find you home. There'll be no more sorrow, no grief and pain, 'cause I'll be happy, happy once again.
I just played was Charles Brown, Please Come Home for Christmas. I just love the music around this time of the year, man. I love all those nice songs and everything, and people getting along, burning wood in a fireplace. I mean, I dig Christmas time. That's my favorite holiday. And, you know, I just want to thank all my listeners from north to south, east to west, for tuning in and making my show what it is. You know, you always can go to the archives and check out my previous shows. Because, you know, pick your own poison. But right now, we got to get back to the handsome Dr. Jeffrey Fidel. Baby, how you doing?
No, I'm doing just fine, Terry. Thank you.
Good, good, good. So now we're going to focus a little bit on you. When did you decide to take the year off? Were you separated from your wife, or before that, and what was the catalyst when you knew it's just time to take a break and evaluate what was going on in your life?
Yes, well, that was the large trauma that happened in my life was when I got divorced, which happened about a year and a half ago, and then my dog died, and then I voluntarily left my job as a doctor. So, like, everything from the outside kind of fell away. So at that point, I really didn't know what to do anymore. So I took a really large risk not knowing what I was doing at the time, and I threw my meds out at that point. And then I was I pretty much lived in isolation for over a year.
Wow.
I endured immense mental suffering, but I found out a lot about myself through this time alone, and I was able to discover some pretty wonderful things inside of myself. So it was a very, very difficult time for me, but you know, it in the long run, it made me a better person.
Okay, well, can I ask you, what kind of meds were you taking?
Well, I was on a few medications. I was on a medication for depression called Paxil. And then because I was diagnosed bipolar when I was 28, since that time, when I was 28, now I threw these meds away, and I'm not recommending people do this because this is extremely dangerous what I did. I'm just giving my life of what I did. But when I was 28, I was placed on Paxil, which is for depression, and Lamictal, and Depakote, those two are called mood stabilizer drugs, and those are common treatment for bipolar. Another one that some other people are on is called lithium. That's another mood stabilization drug. And I actually started off on this other drug called Risperdal, which is an antipsychotic drug. So I was on an entire cocktail of drugs for a long time. So that's like about 16 years before I decided to risk it all and take this inward journey in isolation.
Well, when did you first decide to go seek professional help? I mean, to be able for someone to say, well, Jeffrey, you're bipolar, or this and this and that. When did you decide, what age did you decide that something must be wrong? And what were you doing? Were you having bouts of moodiness or irritation and happiness? What was going on with you so you knew that something just ain't right?
Yeah, well, at that point, thoughts in my mind had complete power over me. So it did get to the point where my mind was scaring me with what it was showing me, so to say. There were certain my sense of smell and taste, and it was almost like the best thing I could tell you was like being on a continuous LSD trip. My mind was very overactive.
Whoa.
And then the problem was is that when I shut my mind off and when it got out of that trip, then it went right into a state where all I would think about is suicidal thoughts. And so it was at that point where those two states of mind were basically all I had. And that's basically the bipolar. That's why it's called bipolar, is basically the mind is now stuck in two states. One is in this almost happy, drug-like state, and the other state where it's just filled with thoughts of not wanting to live anymore. So when it got to that point where my mind was just unable to go on, so to say, that's when I went to the doctor.
Wow. Well, have you ever did drugs coming up? You know, everybody got a past, you know.
Oh, yes. Yes. like almost every other human being, you know, I had used drugs. You know, that was a large part of my life was, I guess, like any other guy that you're talking about, was women and drugs and all the fun things, the so-called temptations or desires of the world was a large part of how I lived. And then, and so after I threw these meds away, when I was in isolation, so to say, I cut myself off pretty much from society. So I removed myself from all these
temptations
outside. And this is when I was able to really discover myself. But this is what I'm saying. It was not an easy thing to do, but this is what's difficult in society today, is that there is a lot of temptation, whether you, wherever you go. Now with the internet, it makes it even more difficult for people to stay out of trouble, so to say. It takes discipline.
Right. When you were talking about you have done drugs and all that other kind of stuff, I mean, was any of those drugs acid?
That wasn't the large part of it, but yeah, I have experimented with hallucinogenic drugs like acid, but not, you know, I tried them like once or twice, you know, back when I was younger, you know, I'd listen to Beethoven's Ninth and then look at the clouds, so to say, that was kind of like, you know, But that's I think many kids growing up, you know, experiment. I think it's kind of unfortunately the accessibility is there, and the curiosity overcomes us, and then we want to just try it, and then that's kind of what happens.
Oh, I understand. I'm not judging you because I got a pass too, but I was just thinking the connection when you were saying before you was getting diagnosed as bipolar was your trip from taking acid made you think these crazy things where in actuality you wasn't really bipolar. Was you just a high and you were just tripping, you know, opposed to really being bipolar? I mean, because after the drugs, you know, and everything, did you have an imbalance of mood swings? Or do you think it was you just being high on acid or whatever that sent you over the edge and you wasn't really bipolar, you were just high?
No, what it is that whether it's any drug, whether it's acid, you take any drug, I don't care, cocaine, even alcohol,
mm-hmm.
It affects the mind, it affects the thoughts.
That's true.
And this is and the same thing with bipolar, which is basically just a state of mind, what it is. Whatever the mind shows a person, if the person believes what their mind's showing them or that what their mind's telling them and they get carried away with it, then that's kind of like what's going to happen with the rest of their being. So that's why when we look at a person, for example, and like you say, it looks like they're flipping out from the outside. We're looking at them, and they might be, like, skipping around, looking like they're whacked out, like you say.
Right.
So why are they acting like that? It's because their mind is in a very active state. Like, we can't see their mind, okay? So we just see their behavior, that they're doing whatever they're doing. But inside of their mind is going on like a sandstorm, and they're reacting to that thought process. And so this is the difficulty with even a psychiatrist. Imagine a psychiatrist has to look at a person and figure out what's in their mind based upon just observing the person, because no one can see into another person's mind. So the behavior of a person that's on a drug you know, crack cocaine, whatever it is, if they're flipping out or whatever, their mind is in a bad state, and then the rest of their body, so to say, is reacting to that mind, and that's why they're jumping around or doing whatever unusual behaviors they're doing, because unfortunately they're in that mind. It's like being in a dream, in an awake state, you know, and until their mind calms down enough, then the rest of their body is not going into that, you know, being taken away by that state of mind that they're in.
Well, let me ask you this. A lot of people, you know, have bad, I guess say, dispositions, and a lot of people act like they are entitled, and they go from being pleasant to unpleasant, you know, and then when someone calls them on it, first thing they want to do is hide behind, oh, I'm depressed, oh, I'm bipolar. How can you tell? Don't they still be accountable regardless whether they got a diagnosis?
Well, I mean, that's part of what we need to do as individuals is just take responsibility for our actions. That's very important, not to hide behind things. But no matter what a person might believe, and this is the problem with thought, so to say, someone might believe that they're great, but that's just their belief, you know. It's as simple as that. That's why I know we're all equal, because behind all the thought, we're just the beings that think. I kind of like to do a flip-flop. It's not who we think we are, or we're not our thoughts, but rather we are the beings that think. And in that way, all human beings are equal, no matter what we think.
Wow. Well, let me ask you about your marriage, if I can go there. How long were you married before you decided to get out of it? And did that trigger a deeper depression? Because sometimes people can deal with depression, and they can be functional. And, you know, they just recognize that, you know, like me, I know that when the weather is overcast or whatever, I'm quiet, I'm withdrawn, you know, into myself. I don't want to communicate with others. So did your depression affect your marriage being resolved, or did it, you know, was a catalyst for something that was controllable to become, like, unbearable?
The loss of the marriage was pretty much it didn't really have to do with my mental health as much as it did that I never thought that I would lose my marriage. It was too much of a shock for my system to handle. And the circumstances of how it went down was a very large trauma for me. I come from a family, I guess, that no one ever got divorced. So for me to lose the marriage was, it was against everything that I was taught or had as a belief system. So it was such a shock to me that, you know, whether I was taking pills or mentally, it was just the shock of the divorce that, shook me awake. And then, like right around the same time, my dog that I love very much, you know how people get very close to dogs. She died right around the same time, so it was like my whole world just you know, animals. I had a very loving relationship with this dog. That dog was pretty much at the time. Was like my wife, so to say. I go to sleep and I cuddle up with her. You know, just like, I don't know. Of course, I had a lot of love for my dog. So losing everything at once was pretty much too much for me to handle at the time, and it sparked off the entire inward journey that I took.
Well, what do you think would be what would be some different some signs that people would recognize as, okay, I did this, I did this, I did this, it means I need some help. Because, you know, life is what it is. You know, people die. You know, people out of relationships, people abuse. There's a lot of things that make people unhappy, which could cause a temporary depression. What I'm saying is, what are some levels that, you know, if I do this or I do this, I do this, it means that I definitely need to see someone, opposed to a temporary depression for coping with stuff that just happens in life.
Yeah, well, those become more personal decisions for the individuals. Everyone, I guess, has a certain tolerance level. There are, like you say, there's just these behaviors that are done to ourselves and each other are what I'd like to just say is unconscious. There's no reason for, you know, the cruelty that we see in the world today is just, there's no need for it. It's very unfortunate that it is like this.
I agree.
You know, we should be treating each other kindly, not like this in any way. There's no need for it. So, you know, a large part of what I was able to do and the discipline of what's required is if certain things are extremely difficult to accept. And it's just like going to certain places within our body, so to say, that we might not want to go.
Right.
The moment of now, like where we're speaking right now, this very moment is the moment where life takes place. Now, so the practice is, and this takes some discipline, but is to practice being in full experience of whatever the moment is. Because a lot of times what causes people to suffer a lot is, let's say that we're doing something that might be enjoyable, so to say. We're at the amusement park, which is supposed to be fun, right? But our minds might not be there. Our minds might be thinking about something that had happened to us last night, maybe a fight we're in or something that happens. So we're no longer at the amusement park, so to say, because our mind is still from last night. So it takes a lot of practice to be able to start to bring our mind to whatever it is we're doing, even if that's eating or whatever, to experience what we're doing and become more present in what we're doing and get out of the habit of having our mind be somewhere else all the time during the day.
Well, Jeffrey, you're so right about that, because often when people come to me, because I guess they think that I'm a peacemaker or I'm a counselor, you know, when I tell people when they're stressing out about situations, I say, first of all, can you at this point in time change the outcome of what you're concerned about? If they say no, I say, well, if you can't change the outcome or alter what's going on, then don't worry about it. Leave that where it's at and just be in the now, in the present. Like you said, calm down, relax, find something else to put on your brain, but don't be focused on something that you can't change. And people need to understand that, you know, stop, you know, arguing and fussing about what somebody did or what's going to happen. If you can't change it, let it go. But on that note, darling, we need to take a small break, and we'll be back in 2 and 2.
Eventually, the truth will come out of the darkness for everyone to see.
Hello? Hey, it's Mike. Hey, how you doing? Oh, yeah, everything's good. It's just been really good. Sorry I haven't been here. Yes. Oh, I haven't forgotten, but I will be there next week. Right now.
There are times in your life when your faith will be challenged.
Hey, man, I want to share something with you. I accepted Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. He's been really wonderful to me. Don't you agree?
I feel like I'm my own guy. For things that's been happening to me, I feel like I've been making those things happen.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you don't believe in God?
Well, I haven't seen him.
The truth can come in shocking form.
Nobody up in my house when I'm at work all day, going day.
No! No! Who is it? Why is he in my house?
Hey, who are you, man?
Is this your mom?
Who are you? Mother, this is my woman and this is my house!
Oh, my girlfriend.
Why is he in this house? What do you mean you didn't know?
When the secret is no longer hidden, you have now been exposed. Written by authoress Terry E. Lyle. Check out her website and on Blog Talk Radio every Friday at 7:30 p.m.
Author is Sir Elial, and our special guest, Dr. Jeffrey Fidel. Now, Jeffrey, I know you're dealing with depression. Now, for the other people out there who might want to ask a question, please hit your one key and let me know you got a comment or you would like to just make a statement. There's a lot of people out there today suffering with bipolar. Now, what's the line between bipolar, manic depressive? I mean, because it seems like, you know, the area of depression has a lot of different categories. It's a thin line between them all. So could you explain the difference between bipolar and manic depression or just being depressed?
Well, I could speak in a different light. These are all labels that were created by the field of psychiatry. So
okay.
Having personally gone through these states of mind, pretty much depression is a label that's given to somebody that has thoughts within their mind that are thoughts that I don't want to live anymore. I wish I could sleep the rest of my life away. When the mind's creating those thoughts, that's basically what a depression is. If the person believes those thoughts and they can't get out of that unhealthy cycle of thinking and they get swept away with it, they enter a state of so-called quote-unquote depression. So for a psychiatrist, they're taking an interview. They hear someone say all these words, I feel depressed, I feel worthless. They write down on their chart depression, and that's the label. Now, for manic depression, I could only know this now after being through that state and being able to look back on it. Manic depression is, let's say, for example, in depression we hear all those thoughts in our mind that I just said, I feel worthless, I feel depressed, I don't want to live anymore. Now imagine being able to do something like this. It's almost like having a switch in your mind where you can just shut off those thoughts completely, and then your mind is quiet. There's not a thought in your mind. Now, some people might think this is a great thing, and that's what happens when someone is manic. Their thinking mind stops, and then there's no thought in the mind. And then, because there's no more words in the mind, the ability to smell, taste, what have you,
well,
it's very heightened because there's no words interfering. Of course, the patient says that he feels great. So then when he's interviewed by a psychiatrist, they say, oh, he's very happy. He's off the wall. He's manic. So those are the two states that are being labeled by psychiatry as manic and depressed.
Well, you have a caller who would like to make a statement or comment. Caller, your last four digits is 1944. How you doing, Carla?
I'm doing fine, thank you. My question for you, doctor, is, I've been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and I have experienced a manic episode and also the depression episode. My question is, I've lost, well, not yet the question, but I've lost two jobs, two good paying jobs. I know now that I, because of my bipolar, because I was so manic that I did some crazy things both times. Do you see, okay, I didn't realize, I'm happy to know I'm bipolar because it explains my bizarre behavior. Would you say someone like that with those conditions are employable?
Certainly employable. There's no doubt about that. When you're talking about, see, you're not bipolar. Your mind is in bipolar states, and I'd like to make that clarification because people are labeling people, complete human beings, as bipolar. Nobody is a depressed person, and no one is a bipolar person. What happens is that the mind goes into these states. So there's no such thing as a bipolar person. What it is when you feel depressed, your mind is likely thinking of thoughts that are not very good thoughts. And then when you are in a state of mania, your mind is not thinking about those bad thoughts, and then you might be a little bit more erratic in your behavior. So I'd like to get that straight from the get-go, is that the bipolar is a state of mind. No person is bipolar.
Okay.
As far as the fact if you're employable, that has much to do with society's perception of whatever job you're doing, whether your mind is stable, quote-unquote, that those thoughts that you're having in your mind don't interfere with your ability to do whatever job it is that you need to perform. That's basically what it comes down to, because, if your thinking mind is getting into states that are distracting you from being able to perform whatever job it is, then that would be the only reason, of course, why you wouldn't be able to do the job, is if the thoughts in your mind are interfering to the point you can't produce or you can't conduct your job. And that's what I was talking about before with Terry, is that a lot of times we could be doing something and our mind is not where we in the present moment. It's somewhere else, and that's the overpowering. That's why the mind could overpower us, because if it's not able to bring attention to the moment of now, then whatever job it is that we might have to perform, the thinking mind might distract us from being able to perform a job. Does that make sense?
Fidel, do you
okay,
think that it's okay for a person that who is dealing with depression, like you said, bipolar is in the mind, and you have went off of your medicine and you're doing well? Would you suggest that people who are taking medicine for bipolar, they will stop taking it?
No, because the states of mind that I endured in order to find this out were inhumane. This is why I had to go a year and a half in isolation. Many times I wanted to go back to the doctor, right? But this is the power of the mind. In a way, I'm kind of like a human experiment, and I didn't know that I'd be able to get out of these states of mind. So I'm not in any way recommending people get off of their medications, and that's a very important point. But I'm just showing that the mind can be so powerful, and like your caller mentioned, if she is in a very strong state of mind, that it distracts from being able to do a job, that's how powerful it could be, you know? If we're upset enough and our mind is in thought enough, no matter what it is we're doing during the day, we might not even, quote-unquote, be there because our mind is somewhere else. And that's how powerful our minds are. So that's what I was speaking with you, Terry, is that the importance of being able to quiet our minds down to bring ourselves back into the moment of now. And this is a practice. It takes some discipline.
Well, Jeffrey, like the lady was saying about, can you be employed if you got a depression issue? Is it possible, since depression is affecting, you know, sometimes her getting to work one time or whatever, could that be a case that she can call a reason why she can't be laid off because this is a medical reason that's out of her control, opposed to being, you know, fired or whatever if a person is going through that?
Yeah, these are more medical legal questions. I'm a medical doctor. I'm a radiologist actually by trade. The reason I know so much about mental health is because I was a sufferer for my entire life. So as far as giving out those kinds of that becomes more of something that I'm not really able to answer quite honestly. What I can say is that whatever depression she's going through is caused by the thoughts within her mind, and it's very difficult to break that cycle that the mind can produce. And this is what I was speaking with you before, Terry, and maybe she can start to perform some of these things that we're talking about, is that whatever it is inside of ourselves that we might be afraid of, to try and at least, you know, go there. Not to be afraid of ourselves, not being afraid of going anywhere within ourselves, not being afraid of feeling within ourselves. And that means bringing our mind's attention to experience a heartbreak or whatever it might be. These are practices that over time break this unhealthy cyclical thoughts that go on. Because if we're afraid of ourselves, then we're going to stay in our mind. So the only way to get out of our mind, quote unquote, is to bring our mind's attention to other places. Otherwise, we get trapped in thought all day, and all we hear in our mind is the cyclical thinking of, I don't want to go anymore, I don't want to do this. So
well,
the trick is to take the mind and bring it some
question.
Other places.
Dr. Fidel, I'm going to let this caller ask you another question or even make her statement. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, Dr.
Caller, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Here. Okay.
And I just entered the empty nest stage, and I went through a terrible divorce after 23 years, and I tell you, it's on a daily basis that I fight depression. Now, my medicine just got readjusted to where I feel I'm able to concentrate a little bit more. I'm able to have some periods of joy, but for the most part, I don't know if the depression comes from being by myself and being in that empty nest syndrome and still grieving the loss of a marriage or whatever it is. I can't tell if my depression is from that or is it from the actual, but you said it's not a disease. Bipolar is not a disease. It's a state of mind. Correct?
That's true. In the end, it's the thinking mind. It's the thoughts in the mind that is causing the suffering of the human being.
Okay. Okay, I understand that. In that case, then, there's things that I can do. It's just going to take some practice. And that's changed my thoughts. You know,
yeah,
the old adage.
But there's another thing even outside of thought that you can begin to do that not even just to have different thoughts, so to say. The divorce is a trauma. It's a major trauma, of course. It's a big life changer. So in order to start to heal, you might try this. And this is what, let's say we might be afraid to feel. Something, maybe our heart hurts. I don't know. That's probably what happens. You know, no one likes to have our heart broken. It's not a fun thing, right?
Right.
I remember the first time I lost my girlfriend in college. I couldn't even, like, breathe. That's kind of the way it went down. So what happened is, what I was able to do and what I learned, and this is what I'd like to share with you, is no matter how scary you might think it is to go to the heartbreak, at least start giving it a little try. And that means to bring the mind's attention, not to think about things about how you how we wish that we were back together again or we have company, so to say, but rather to bring the mind to actually feel what it is we might be afraid. So if it's heartbreak, just to bring the mind to the heart area, bring the attention there, and see if we could feel it without putting words or anything to it. Just what is that sensation of heartbreak?
Well,
and let it go.
Dr. Fidel, well, let me ask you this. And this, suppose, hypothetically, I was in a relationship. It didn't work out. I'm depressed. Okay, now I acknowledge that I'm depressed because this person did this, 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 and this. Okay, because I acknowledge it and because the companionship is over, does that make me depressed? And is that how I call healing, by numbering out the flaws that cause the separation? How does that make me heal? It just pisses me off.
Well, it's the thoughts in the mind that are causing that you're identifying with that's making you upset. Now, the reason a lot of people reach for alcohol or drugs after they go through a trauma is because they don't want to feel the pain of whatever that trauma is. And a lot of times that's a heartbreak, so to say. So the easy thing to do is just go out drinking or go out and see people and take our minds away or even engage in very risky activities, so to say. Those are more of distractions. So what I'm saying is to just try, and these are scary at first and are not fun to do, and that's why most people don't like to do them or even try to do them. I'm saying to just try to bring the mind's attention to maybe a place within ourselves that we don't necessarily want to go. So if that means to try and experience a heartbreak, when we go there, we'll see that it doesn't really kill us. It's actually kind of a weird sensation. It's a different sensation, but it will never hurt us. It's just different. So to be able to sit there with a heartbreak, so to say, it's kind of like the new practice that that's how I healed myself, was to go to places within myself that I was, quote unquote, afraid to go or subconsciously protecting myself from going.
Okay, well, pump
okay, doctor, I have one more question, and that
ahead,
is, what do you have any books that you would recommend for someone to read, someone like me to read?
Yeah, he got one, a bestseller on Amazon.
I have my book, which is my book's more of a personal memoir of what exactly happened to me and the states of mind I endured. It's not quite the book that recommends how to deal with one's personal issues. It's more of a testament of what. States of, you know, what the mind is capable of producing, and how I was able to heal myself by telling you about these very things I'm talking about, and that's enabling myself to feel again. Because I was so afraid to feel my entire life. You know, as a man, I was brought up that, or at least the perception I had, it's not cool to cry. You know, it's good to have, you know, to be a macho man. And all these things that were taught to me in society. So I had to erase all those teachings that I was taught and relearn other things, and that was the ability to cry again, actually, and to feel again. And that's that was a very different thing for me, because the easy thing for me to do before I've done this was to just go out and start drinking. And that was, like, pretty much how I handled things in the past until I discovered this way of healing.
Okay, well, I have something that I disagree. with, okay, I'm not a doctor, I'm just me, but when you said that when a person has gone through something that's traumatic, whether it's a relationship that's over, loss of employment, whatever, go to that place. Okay, now, to me, that just sounds stupid, and I'm going to tell you why it sounds stupid. If I'm upset because my relationship is over, I know why. I know because this guy, maybe he was dealing with infidelity. Maybe this guy was a drunk. Maybe this guy was abusive. I know. I don't have to sit in no corner and say, oh, woe is me. Let me recognize that he done picked me upside my damn head. You know, I ain't got to go there. So, to me, I don't get that. You know, basically, you acknowledge that it's over. And like you said, people turn to drugs or whatever because they're trying to cope. Sometimes people celebrate because it's over. Sometimes it's a blessing when you're in a relationship that's just bad. So as a doctor, even though you're in radiology, I am surprised as a man that every time something goes bad, you know, I mean, you internalize it and you make it seem like, oh, I'm depressed or I got such a person, you know. And I ain't trying to be funny, but when you was growing up as a kid, did you have an imaginary friend?
I think I did. I think I used to talk to myself a lot. Yeah, we all did. But yeah, I wasn't feeling sorry for myself with this. What I'm saying is that by allowing myself to cry, that was like there's a healing in just allowing myself to feel, to express myself. It's not that I was feeling sorry for myself, but if I felt like crying, I cried, you know? But
right.
I didn't repress myself from doing it, in other words. And
right.
If I wanted to feel within myself, I felt within myself. It takes a lot of strength to actually cry. It took me a long time to gain enough courage to allow myself to cry because I was taught not to. It's not that I was feeling bad for myself. It's just I allowed myself to do something that my mind said don't do, and I did it. And in that crying, there was healing in that. And the same thing in the ability to feel, there's healing in that. So I kind of broke my belief system. It's not okay to feel. It's not okay to cry. I put a stop to that, and I allowed myself to do it. And there's healing in those very processes. It's not that I was feeling sorry for myself at all. I just allowed myself to, I allowed my body outside of my mind to go through its natural healing or its natural release of what it's holding inside. And this is really what's happening is that the body is holding all this stuff inside, and if we don't allow it to go through the natural motions, it just keeps getting pent up year after year after year after year. There's no way to get it out. So it's by feeling and crying that it's able to, so to say, release the steam that it needs to get out.
I agree. Well, Dr. Fidel, we need to tell people about your book. It's on Amazon. It's the number one bestseller, how much it costs, and how can they get a hold of you. And then we're going to wrap this thing up and take it home.
Okay, so the best way to get a hold of me and my book is through my website, which is jeffreyfidelmd.com. That's JeffreyFidelMD.com. And on there is the link to the book. And the name of the book is simply I, and it's also on Amazon. And again, the name of the book is I. It has a subtitle as well, One MD's Inward Journey to Liberate Himself from Mental Suffering. Again, it's JeffreyFidelMD.com or on Amazon where they could purchase the book. If they want to search directly on Amazon, then they could just put in my name, Jeffrey Fidel, MD, and it will come up in that way.
Well, Dr. Fidel, I got one more question before I go take this home. You said that you took a year off. You evaluate yourself on a more intimate level. You stopped taking your meds. So hypothetically, what happens if you have some issue, God forbid, death, or, you know, loss of employment, you know, things that we go through in life, you know, basically, what happens when you have that next moment of time when you just agitated? Do you start taking your pills again, or do you sit somewhere and just reflect and just move past it and just chalk it up as like, you know, I'm dealing with it, I'm coping? What do you do? I know I usually cuss and get crazy.
Yeah, well, the discipline was I don't let the thought, I don't run with the thoughts in my mind now. In other words, everything that we're talking about here, in the end, it's the thoughts in the mind that cause the suffering. So what I'm able to do at this point is I allow my thoughts to just go without running with them. If we can just sit still enough and let the thinking mind do its thing without believing in everything it needs to say, like if we open up the refrigerator door, the first thought might come to our mind, man, that's a good cake, I'm going to go eat it, right? But
right.
If we wait a second, that thought will pass and then another thought will come. So we don't have to believe or take action on every thought that we have, and that's the discipline, is to know that thoughts are just that. They're not us. They're our thoughts. We are not thoughts. We think, but we're not thoughts, and that's kind of like the take-home message. We're all the same. We're all beings, but we are not our thoughts.
Okay, well, I am, because my thought is that, you know, if I open that refrigerator and see that cake, I'm going to eat it. And my thought is that I'm thick and juicy. My mirror say I'm thick and juicy, so it is what it is. But, you know, thank you for being here on my show. I appreciate you, and I hope everybody get your little checkbooks out, get your piggy bank out, you know, do your PayPal, support Dr. Fidel and get his book. It's on Amazon. It's called One MD's Inward Journey to Liberate Himself from Mental Suffering, and the help it offers for those diagnosed with bipolar, mentally ill, or depressed. And we all are going through something, and I appreciate you being here, but we're going to take it home with a song by Khalifa. It's called It's Been a Long Day Without You, My Friend. Thank you so much, Dr. Fidel, for being here. And everyone, have a great weekend. Be safe. Don't drive and drink, and don't drive and do drugs. Let someone else take you where you need to go.
Thank you, Terry. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, baby. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again, when I see you again. Why'd you have to leave so soon, yeah? Why'd you have to go? Why'd you have to leave me when I needed you the most? 'Cause I don't really know how to tell you without feeling much worse. Till the day you're home. carry on. Give me all the strength I need to carry on. So let the light guide your way. Yeah. Hold every memory as you go, and every road you take will come a long way from where we began.